Please note, this documentary contains language and discussion from the start which some listeners may find distressing and offensive. Listener discretion is advised.
Previously on Turnstiles to Touchlines.
For girls up and down the country dreaming of becoming a professional footballer, they've got to start somewhere. Grassroots. And it seems fitting that me and Owen should end our journey where, for most professionals, now, it all began. But does the culture of English football allow a fully functioning grassroots system?
Next morning I woke up and thought, okay, 9 WhatsApp messages pop up, all from the dad, and he is like flaming abuse at me, like that I'd never seen before. And I looked at that and I was just like, what?
Since the return of fans to stadiums post-COVID, it seems as if there's a new incident involving fans every week, whether that be the scenes at the final of the 2020 European Championships at Wembley, a racial social media post, or just something kicking off at your local non-league club.
I'm Owen Taylor.
And I'm Jack Carson.
And we wanted to go on a journey to find out if there's a troublesome culture returning in English football, and are we regressing to a time where football hooliganism was the norm?
Welcome to episode 5 of Turnstiles to Touchlines.
Well, here we are, episode 5, Jack. The end is in sight.
It's the end of the journey, Owen. It feels strange.
It feels like a lifetime ago when we started this.
And we've learned
the planning.
We've learned a hell of a lot. I can't wait to sit down and actually work out what we've learned. But we've still got one more part to go. I guess it's kind of a bit ironic that we've ended it and we're ending our journey where, for a lot of kids and for a lot of footballers, the journey starts, and that's with grassroots.
Yes, but is there an underlying problem in grassroots that, you know, we don't hear or see of every day, you know, in the news? You know, parents insulting young children, coaches being abused. We're going to get into all of that in this episode, aren't we?
Well, it does happen, because grassroots is football's bloodline. Every footballer has to start somewhere. And it's widely talked about the financial struggles that grassroots faces, and we don't want to take away from that problem. We're here to look at what doesn't get talked about enough, that cultural reality.
You know, there's 18,500 clubs in England, and every week up and down the country they fill parks, stadiums, playing the beautiful game. There are approximately 85,000 sports coaches, instructors, officials working in the UK as of 2021, and that's actually the fewest number of people in these professions since 2014, when there were 82,000. Now, you could put that, you know, down to COVID, I suppose, but it's still an awful low number, and you think that's one of the lowest figures we've had in the past 7-8 years.
Well, is that down to actually what it's really like on the touchlines? Because for this, we wanted to speak to someone who knows how it feels and who's got as well a pretty inspiring story when it comes to coaching the next generation of English talent.
Okay, my name is Liam Owen Davis. I'm a 19-year-old university student in Birmingham City University. And outside of university, I am a football coach in foundation phase.
Where did you kind of start your love with football, I guess, as a kid?
So my love for football began by basically following my dad around everywhere. He was a football coach from sort of his 20s and 30s. He started getting into grassroots football coaching. And then as soon as I was able to kick a football, I just followed him around everywhere, helped him pick up cones, you know, collect footballs in and just sort of watch what he did.
So Liam coaches for the under-8s for Birmingham side Solihull Moors and was actually a Birmingham FA Rising Star in 2021.
Yes, Solihull having a good season as we record this. Of course, they're in the playoffs and the National League, looking to break into the Football League. And you wouldn't think, for a club in non-league, they have so many youth categories. But I suppose it shows just how accessible football's becoming now, not only for young children, but for coaches, people wanting to get into coaching. And it's the case for Liam, isn't it? Because coaching came a bit out of nowhere for him.
So to just become a coach, and this is not just football coaching, I feel like this is every aspect of life, no matter what profession you go into. If you want to get into it, you just need to put yourself into the deep end. And it's a quote that I sort of came up with myself, is that you never learn to swim in a puddle. You just have to sometimes put yourself in the deep end and test yourself. And, you know, no such thing as losing. No matter if you face negatives, you learn from it and you improve. Now, when I first started coaching, it was just volunteering. At the age of 15, I was offered, when I was head boy in school, the opportunity to simply just assist the PE teacher after school football with year 7 and 8. And I thought, you know what? I like playing football. You know, it'd be nice for me to go and see if there's something different about coaching that I might enjoy. Now, at the time, I liked playing football, didn't know anything about coaching, but my mind was set on being a physio. And then I did my mock exam for biology and got an E. So I went home, I was like, I got an E in biology. I actually managed to claw it back and get a B. When I got the E in the mock, I sort of went home and I was thinking to myself, like, maybe I should look for like something else. And like, sort of just test different fields and see if there's something else that I like. So that chance the coach came along, did the first session. Obviously, I had no idea what to do as a coach. I was just simply observing and doing all like the little jobs, like collecting cones. But then as soon as I came out of that session, I was like, I love this. And it's so weird, even after 1 hour, I didn't even actually coach, but I was just in that coaching environment and seeing how the PE teacher was able to have an impact on those kids in just 1 hour. I thought, great, this is it.
So do you prefer coaching to playing then? I know that's quite a broad question, but do you prefer giving the instructions from the sideline?
If you'd have asked me this question when I was 15, I'd have said no. If you'd have asked me when I was 17, I would have said maybe. Ask me it now, yeah, I prefer coaching over playing. And it's a hard question to answer, I think, really, because I think playing and coaching go so well together. I think there's so much you can benefit from in your coaching from when you play football. You know, as a footballer, you see so many current managers now that were former players and understand the game so well, even on such little coaching experience, what impact they can have. But then also when I'm playing as well, you know, a lot of players I play with say, you play like a coach, which might sound like a very confusing thing, but it's just like doing the very simple things well and like looking very technical, not trying to do too much, because if I try and do too much when I'm playing, I can never go back to coaching and expect them to do the simple things because it doesn't quite work each way. So I'm at the moment enjoying my coaching so much, I think, just because it's a pure passion of mine and I put so much energy into it as a result of loving it so much. And I still like playing football. I still enjoy it just as much because it, again, helps the kids that I coach, you know, look towards me as a role model that's still playing as well. But yeah, the passion for coaching is there. And with it being 4 years since I first started coaching, it's just built up along the way.
As someone who has such a clear passion for the game at such a young age, we wanted to know that moment that kick-started the passion into a career path.
And it came to, about 3 months later, we had the Christmas fair in school. Now I was helping the teacher with like a penalty shootout stall. And a parent starts making the way over to me with a kid. My instant thought was shock, horror, like, what have I done wrong? I was like, oh, it's going to be negative, isn't it? And the parent came over to me, and I still remember this moment. I think it was probably the turning point in terms of my mentality and going towards coaching. But the parent said, my kid's really settled into school quite well this year, as a year seven. Not just, obviously, because the teachers have been really helpful, but when he started coming to after-school football, he really looks to you as a role model and enjoys just simply your presence there. And so I'd walked away from that thinking, right, I've only been doing this for 3 months. I'm not specifically leading it yet, but I found a passion for it. I'm walking away from it, enjoying it. And not just that, but the people that I'm working with are enjoying it too. So I'm not only benefiting myself, but parties around me as well. So that kickstarted it. I thought, I'm going to, you know, see where this can go now. I did another 200 plus volunteering hours, which meant that the Wrexham Council, Wrexham County Council paid for my level one in football coaching. That then allowed me to start coaching the under 10s team at Rose Aylward, the adult club that I joined after school. And it was just a kickstart from there.
Now, Liam's attempts at kickstarting his career path into coaching probably couldn't have come at a worse time, right before the pandemic. And this is where myself and Jack learn the most on our journey, the moments where people have to pull themselves out of an awful situation.
I mean, we were all faced, weren't we, with this situation of being stuck at home, not knowing what to do with ourselves. And often, for a lot of people our age anyway, it was our parents, our mums, our dads, you know, carers, nans, granddads, aunties, uncles, that actually pulled us up. And for Liam, it was no different either.
So I'd done my level one and I was sort of just beginning my level two, my C license.
Hang on, so the coaching badges Liam's refers to, well, what actually are they? It's just like a degree. It's a qualification which proves your ability to coach at a certain level. These currently go from level one to the FA UEFA Pro license. The FA wanted to ensure there's a continuous culture within football coaching. Above all, they proposed that all aspiring coaches should learn about their long-term player development programme. I mean, I've got a couple mates in the game. I see them, they're making notes all the time. It's not an easy process. It is quite a rigorous process, isn't it?
Yeah, well, because this is it. Gaining badges is all about understanding what is important to a player's development. And it's what's called the four corners, which include the development of technical, physical, social, and psychological elements of a player, whatever age,
they might be.
So level one is an entry level course. That's a course open to anyone over the age of 16. You need no prior experience to enter this either. Now, while the FA say level three course is for coaches working with a team of under 14s upwards in an 11 versus 11 format, I say that in quotation marks.
When you actually then get up into level four plus, you can work as a manager or coach in the professional game or academy manager. Anyway, now that you know all about coaching badges, let's go back to Liam in a pandemic.
And that's when COVID happened, which it did slow things down.
Did it make you reconsider at all what you were doing?
Yes, 100%. And I was going to answer that because when COVID first started, it put a complete stop to it in a way that nobody had ever seen before. And I did struggle at first, the first sort of month or two. I think like everyone, I was just sort of playing FIFA and Warzone and doing all those boring things that when we look back now, you're like, oh, we take it for granted. But no, I wanted to be outside and I wanted to do, you know, what I was passionate at and what I was good at the time. And it put a stop to it, but I was fortunate enough to have very creative parents, still do, and they were always presenting me with ideas. And my dad came home from work one day and said, have you watched Joe Wicks? I was like, yes. He said, why not try a football Joe Wicks? And I was like, how haven't I thought of this? I mean, great idea. So got myself a tripod for my phone, put it on top of a wheelie bin in the garden, got some cones out, got some footballs out, and started recording a Joe Wicks style football session that I would then edit to put on YouTube. Now, I'd done media in college, so I was quite confident in how to edit, you know, what would look good on camera, what would be appealing to that audience. But then as soon as I put myself in front of the camera, I didn't know what to do. I was like, Why don't I know what to do? Why don't I feel confident? In my head, I was like, oh, what if the neighbors hear me? What are they going to think? And I was like, I still think of that moment now. I think I compare it to myself now and think, you know, why was I nervous? Yeah. Because it's what I'm passionate about and it's what I love doing. But as I then started to record more videos, the views started to go up. I was starting to get recognized. And then about 3 months later, again in that 3 month period, it's funny because everything seemed to work in 3 month periods, but about 3 months later, I made it into the newspaper in my local town. Massive article on one of the first pages about my ambition to basically get kids re-engaged with football and sort of reignite that passion in what is a massively sporty town in Wrexham. So,
you know, I always assumed all guests in the back of my mind that to run a grassroots team or, you know, even just be involved, you have to go above and beyond for the kids that you coach.
And I mean, speaking to Liam, what is already jumping out at me is how actually whilst he has his own goals in football, he knows what he wants to achieve. But every day, even in a pandemic, he was waking up thinking, how can I keep that engagement between kids and football? And if that meant balancing his phone on a bin, then on a bin it was.
You know, let's move on from COVID now. I think we're all fed up of hearing about lockdowns, pandemic. So let's bring you up to speed with Liam now. Like we mentioned earlier, he's the coach for Solihull Moors' under-8s team.
And in the last part of our journey, we heard some of the amazing ways that women's football has progressed. And at an under-8s level, teams are actually mixed sex. So when you have girls and boys playing together, Liam described the experience and the reality you can face when this is the case.
The girl was in the team when we first started. Yeah. And when she first started, you could tell there was like a bit of ability there, but she was a bit shy. We kept on coaching the team and I brought Josh in, the other coach, with me. We kept on coaching the team and we could tell, especially this season, week after week, the girl was really improving. Like, she was really improving. Now, I'll go back to this game against the team we drew 1-1 against. The other team, I even heard one of them say, oh, they've got a girl playing for them. And so I looked at the girl and she heard that and she looked at me, but she just laughed. And I said, that's perfect. Go out there and prove them wrong. She went into a 50-50 tackle with one of the strongest players on that team and floored him, a boy. And even the parents of my team are clapping, like, go on, like. And that just proved to the boy, who was then like looking up thinking, I don't know why I said that. Because it's like, it's true. Like, why would you base your opinion on a kid that's playing football based on the fact they're a girl or a boy, their gender? For me, it's crazy. But the fact that she has kept improving is proving to those people that it doesn't matter, because she is now one of definitely the most talented players I've seen at that age. And we've managed to get her a trial at Aston Villa. She isn't fazed by the fact she's the only girl in the team and hardly ever plays against girls. It's usually just boys. But she goes out there every week. She gives it 110%. She gets stuck in. And it comes back to me and saying that she's part of that team. And she might be the only girl, but it doesn't make her different from anyone else. And especially then, in the very rare situation we play against a team that has a girl, the manager will come over to me and talk about, you know, the fact that the girl on their team was really impressed and, like, you know, takes inspiration from it. And I've had one or two situations where even the parents of the girl on the opposite team will come over and say, you know, it's great to see another girl she can play against, because it just validates and shows her that you're not the only one.
Yeah.
And it is that, like, real community feeling when it goes right down to grassroots football where it starts, just saying everyone's welcome and there's no barriers as to why you should or shouldn't be able to take part.
Yeah, it's interesting we come back to talking about girls. I mean, we had such a great chat with Chloe, didn't we, in our last episode, of course.
One of the most eye-opening things, yeah. Experiences, I think, of the whole journey.
And, you know, even for women at a, quote, professional level, it's, you know, not easy. And we spoke to Gina, of course, who's making the pathway at grassroots. And, you know, that pathway is becoming wider, we should say, because the number of women and girls playing football in England has reached more than 3.4 million. That's met the Football Association's target to double participation in 3 years when it launched the plan back in 2017. And yeah, it's all well and great. More can always be done. We can always do more. And so The Guardian have actually reported there's been a 54% increase in affiliated women's and girls teams to 9,251.
And then you've got school partnerships. There were 2,000 Disney-inspired Shooting Stars programmes, 147 Just Place centres for adults, and 88 community club organisations have also played a part in achieving that. Now, according to the FA, football is officially the biggest women's sport in England. And if we remind ourselves, like you mentioned, Owen, of Gina Beardmore, who coaches at Chelmsea Colts, you can see and feel the difference on the touchlines.
Oh, massively. I stopped playing because I didn't think girls' football was going anywhere. There was not a thing about women being on TV playing football when I was young. I'm 35, so you can imagine how different women's football is now. They're actually playing on TV, like girls playing football. So for me, that is the best thing that's come out of women's football, is seeing women on BBC playing football, because I never thought it would happen when I was a kid.
And does that help you trying, like, recruit players here, like, and play for your Chelsea Colts?
It does a little bit, yeah. You get players, but you sometimes get very new players, and this is a thing at Chelmsley. We're happy to take in them players. We don't mind. If you've never played football, we want you to come and play for us, because we will coach you and build you up and get you playing. Some teams in Birmingham won't take you unless you're at such a level, but we'll take anybody, because we want everyone to learn and have the opportunity to play 90 minutes of football every weekend and full-on adults women's football.
So, well, grassroots is becoming more inclusive, it's becoming more diverse as the years have gone on. However, we still heard there from Liam that this girl was mocked for being on his team. Just a young girl
wants to just play football for a bit of fun.
Marks. It's disgusting.
And, you know, while it is also coming from another kid at times, saying, oh, look, there's a girl on their team, you'd think that maybe parents would have taught kids to say, what are you doing? You don't say that. They're just as good as you.
You do wonder if that misogyny and that sexism links back to what this documentary is all about, that culture of poor fan behaviour, or that culture in England.
Yeah, and a football culture of, yeah. Oh, it doesn't matter if they're a woman, because this is more than being a woman. This is because it's football and only men can play football. You agree, how embedded is that misogyny in football culture? And it seems, you know, even down at that lower level, it exists.
So the next thing we had to find out was if there is this culture of poor behaviour at a lower level, or even abuse on a regular basis at a grassroots level.
And I have got a bit of experience of this myself. So a few years ago, probably August 2019, I helped out at my local grassroots club when they held, I mean, it was a huge football tournament. Thousands of people turned up. There were loads of people, and most of the time, kind of a great atmosphere, really, really positive. But on every pitch, at some point throughout the day, with some kind of team, there was a coach or a parent who just shouted abuse, or was just kind of uncontrollable with their behaviour. And so as a coach himself, we had to see if this was just a one-off in my case, or actually it is more embedded into grassroots as a culture. And some of the parents get really animated and they get really into it, and they want to become the coach themselves, and they want to tell that kid, why are you there, you should be there, whatever. How do you deal with that as a coach? Have you ever had an experience where a parent's been just in your ear all game?
Yeah, so, I mean, you wouldn't like to think it at under-8s level that it happens, but it does, and it happens in every aspect of football. And in every sport, I'd say. I know I've watched other sports where it's exactly the same. When I was 7 and I was playing tennis, you'd get exactly the same. Even in a 1v1 situation in tennis, you'd get parents of the other kids shouting, you know, what they expect their kid to do. Now, in football, with it being a team sport, you get more parents there, increase the probability of it happening. And I know a lot of the time the parents' intentions are good and that they want to help their kids and they want to make sure that, you know, being the best they can be. But I have experienced it where, as a coach, I see it even at my age, and it does just go too far. And it goes to a point where even me being 19, and I don't want to tell a parent what they should be doing, I do have to step in and say, you need to reduce how much you're trying to provide to your child on the pitch. Because even at that age, it's just simply sometimes about letting them play. Even as a coach, I step back sometimes and just let them play. Because give them too much information, it's just going to overload, and they're going to be stood there looking around thinking, I don't know what to do. I always look to the parents now and just say, after the game, 100%, have a chat with your child. How did they think they got on? You tell them how you thought they get on, but be real about it. Because even at that age, you know, if they played well, fair enough, you praise them and it's really good they get that positive feedback. If they weren't so good, okay, you don't slam them because they're a kid. But what you do is that you give them constructive feedback. You know, you come away from it saying, right, you did this really well, but, you know, what do you think about this? And would you like to work on that? And for me, luckily as a coach, I'm stuck with a really good group of parents in the team that if there is anything their child flags up, they'll text me or they'll ring me and they'll say, look, my child's walked away from the game, say they think they can do this better, or they've got this sort of mindset towards that. Can you help them work on it? And for me as a coach, being so passionate about it, I will. The difference is, though, whenever in a game I do see parents of my team that are maybe shouting too much, I flag it up afterwards and say, you know, needs to stop. In our team at the moment, it's been fantastic. There's none of that. We brought in a new lad this season. It's his first time ever playing for the team, but he's, you know, really loves playing football. He's really passionate about it, so I wanted to bring him into the team. Now, his parents, obviously, they've never experienced their child playing football. His dad, mainly, who brings him most of the time, has never experienced his child playing football. And so, in the very first game, obviously, he's really passionate about football as well. Let's just say his child's called Timmy. Okay, so Timmy gets on the ball. All the other parents are like, you know, having a chat with each other. All of a sudden, come on, Timmy, come on, get forward. Loses the ball. No, go win it back. And I was stood there, being the first time I've seen his dad be with him in the match situation. And I thought, right, I want to stamp this out quickly. Because the more it goes on, the less confidence that child's going to have. And they're going to keep on looking over to their parent thinking, I'm looking to him as to what should I be doing right and what am I doing wrong, instead of carrying on playing, but then coming to me as the coach and saying, you know, this was not, I didn't think that was so good. How can I improve it? So that carried on for 1 or 2 weeks. And then it actually got to a point where it was like, it was really affecting the kid. You could see it. And the kid got upset in training because his dad was shouting at him. And then on the Sunday, the week after, we had a cup final and we lost on penalties. I gave his child the chance to take the penalty that decided if we scored, we'd stay in it. If he missed, we'd lose. But with any kid, I'd say, I give you that responsibility because you learn from it anyway. And I knew he was due that opportunity because it was his first time playing in a team. And I knew because he was so passionate about football, he would take it on the chin and I could help him moving forward. He missed the penalty and his dad pulled him over straight away. He was like, what are you doing? That was an awful penalty. So I was just like, I can't deal with this any longer. It's got to stop now. So I rung his dad the next day. I'd had a thought about it the day before, and the child himself, as passionate as he was, you could tell he wasn't really keeping up with everyone else. Now, I never see ability as a factor as to how I take on players at that age. I purely look for the passion of football and, you know, if there's something to work with there. So I took on this child knowing that he could definitely improve. But then as the weeks were going on, I found that he was continuing to fall behind. And as where the rest of the group were continuing to sort of improve in sync and they were continuing to sort of take the next step forward, he was finding it hard. And I felt as though that was partially a result of maybe he was not strong enough. He's quite a small child. He's not quite able to develop alongside him. And as well, his dad just wasn't helping the situation at all. That was perfectly clear. So I rang him and just said, the way that you've been handling, you know, how your child's performing, I feel as though it's affecting him. I feel as though he's not able to keep up with everyone else. So the solution that I gave out was that he finds another team for the rest of the season that are a lower ability. He picks up his confidence and just gets more involved. Because even in matches on Sundays, he was getting like 1 or 2 touches of the ball in the whole game. And I said to him, it's not doing him any justice and he's not going to be able to enjoy it this way. So as hard as it is for me, knowing he's a good kid, I feel as though the best situation is for him to move on and find a different team. And on the phone, I was expecting him to go mad at me, but he said, no, you know, I appreciate that. I appreciate the fact you've given him a starting point. So I thought, perfect, that's it. We'll help him find a different team as well, because I know of different teams in Birmingham, grassroots teams. I'll help him find a team as well. I'm not just going to leave you without anything. So I wanted to help off with that. Next morning, I woke up and thought, okay, that's it done. 9 WhatsApp messages pop up, all from the dad, and he is like flaming abuse at me, like that I'd never seen before. Like, he woke up saying, "Liam, can't lie, I'm pissed off with you, bro." He ended the message with, then said, "You know, why didn't you give until the end of the season? You even said yourself that kids take time to improve. It's your job to make sure you're doing that. I'm fucking pissed off." And I looked at that and I was just like, what? Like, yesterday on the phone, you were so good about, you know, how taking the situation and realizing that I've done what I can as a coach to give him that starting point and moving on, you know, that's what I want to do, is help him get the best possible situation. But he was flaming abuse at me, saying, like, you know, it's a disgrace that you've done this. You know, he's going to feel like so upset, and he's going to think that even though he's been working hard, you're just like sacking him off. So I didn't even know what to reply. So I read the messages and I just took a step back and I just sat there for about a good half an hour. Like, I don't know what to reply to this.
You know, as a player, as a coach, as a human being, no one should ever receive that kind of abuse. Everyone's going to have their own opinion. Every coach is going to have their own methods, their own opinion, their approach to their job. And Liam was obviously coming at it from an angle of just trying to make sure the kid was enjoying themselves.
I think we need to stretch this further, Owen, because grassroots, Sunday league, semi-professional, you know, those lower levels, we've heard abuse that gets chucked at coaches and players. But what about those in the middle, the referees?
Well, Jack, we see it all the time on TV or Twitter. There's referees, well, I say prep referee, but when there's a Premier League game on, there's a referee's name trending on Twitter or VAR every single time. You get fed up at the conversation after a while, don't you?
We thought VAR might be the thing that stops the controversiality around Premier League refereeing decisions, but if anything, it's doubled it. It's increased it.
Yeah, so, you know, let's speak to someone about it.
Hello, mate.
You alright, mate?
Yeah, not bad. Another day, another dollar.
Don't say that again.
Well, let's So, if you want to try and maybe find a referee, and I'll look at some charities, and we'll see if we can get someone to talk to.
Sounds good.
Okay, so I have found this charity called Ref Support UK. So they've literally just popped up on my Twitter feed. I've been looking, and they seem to do a lot about to protect referees and campaign for them against the abuse they get. So I think maybe should try and get in touch with them. Oh, and he's got back to me already. Hi, Giant. Thanks for your email. Happy to be involved. Times and dates. Should we say Thursday? I think we're both free. Thursday?
I'm free then. I can pop down to Birmingham, so.
Cool. Yeah, no. You come. One? Gives you time in the morning, doesn't it?
Yeah, I can come down at one.
Cool. So, it's been half an hour now, and we've not heard anything, so.
I don't think this is happening.
I mean, I do apologise the fact that I've made you come half an hour, 45 minutes on the train to Birmingham for not an interview. But this is all part of the journey, Owen. It has come right at the end.
Yeah.
But we knew it would have to happen at some point.
It was too plain sailing, too simple for it to be true.
We're on too much of a high. We've been brought back down to reality. But it's the way it goes.
That's life.
But the good thing is that we still have those stories. And I think it's important that even though we can't speak to Martin from Ref Support UK, I think the important thing is still to share that reality.
This one's an anonymous one, and it reads, "What a man's game I had today. Send off the captain for being the last defender and use of excessive force in the tackle, so either way it was going to be a red. After the game, the manager / goalkeeper says, 'Don't send in the booking because we need him for the semi-final next week,' and then called me a fucking cheating cunt, so dismissed him, and then went to knock my red card out of my hand, and the first player who I dismissed came into my changing room, urinated all over my kit and bag, then spat on my tracksuit."
This is the story of Nathan Tansley. feeling absolutely shit and mentally battered after being told, "I'm gonna fucking stab you, cunt," by a spectator. Tonight I'm debating just stopping. What's the point? I don't mind the stick, but when you feel generally threatened on a pitch, what is the point? Massive shout to the referee and other assistant referees and spectators for checking on me after the incident and helping me to ID the person. All of this because of a flag for a foul in the last minute, which disallows a goal 95% of people agreed with.
Unbelievable.
Threatening to stab him because of a correct decision.
It's like you say before, no words to describe it, is there?
But the fact is, I think because it's a lower level, this is why this is highlight. We can highlight this because it's a lower level, because there are less people at that game. This happens just because this happens at grassroots level doesn't mean it happens at every single level on the pyramid. I mean, guarantee you there are Premier League referees which get death threats.
Absolutely, 100%.
And I just think, because there's 40,000 people in the crowd and you might not hear that one person might not stand out, doesn't mean it doesn't happen.
Mike Dean, him and his family received death threats back in February 2021 after there was two controversial incidents in a game. He was refereeing it. The abuse followed two controversial red card decisions against West Ham's Thomas Souček and Southampton's Jan Bednarek, and they were subsequently overturned following the appeal. But him and his family got death threats.
I don't know what to say.
Happens at all levels.
And I don't know what to say. Is this the culture? It makes me angry. Because all throughout this journey, we have heard the awful abuse that people get. Homophobic abuse, racist abuse. And we've also heard the great positives that are going forward in how the police can deal with that. How the women's game has developed and to become such a positive force for the game going forward. But this just makes me angry. Is this really the culture of people we're dealing with? Is this really the kind of people? I don't want to support football and I don't want to be involved in football if these are the kind of people that I'm sharing a stadium with. And people say these are the minority. These people, screw them being a minority or majority, these people are disgusting. I'm not sure if I want to be involved in football if these are the kind of people that are there as well.
Yeah. Unbelievable, isn't it? And, you know, like we say, it's not just referees, it's Liam as well, just coaches.
Just people
also
doing...
victims of abuse.
Yeah, trying to get better, doing what's fun at the weekend.
Doing what they enjoy.
Exactly.
That's it, they're doing what they love, playing part of the beautiful game because they love football, and they're brought down and threatened.
Exactly.
Because of trying to do their job. No one deliberately goes out their way. Or it's very rare someone deliberately goes out their way to, you know, ruin a game of football or sabotage. I'm sure referees take no pleasure in sending a player off. But the reactiveness that we've just heard of, and just three cases, I mean, it's enough to leave us both speechless.
Despite the setbacks, despite everything that goes on, there's always positives to take from every situation. And Liam was pretty clear when we were speaking with him of actually the good side and the positive reality the grassroots football can bring, not only to a coach, but also to kids as well.
But also to a community. I mean, how lucky are we with the amount of football pitches, accessibility to clubs? I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal.
One quick Google and you can find a club within seconds.
Exactly. Well, you just got to go to your local park. There's a pitch there. You know, when I come on the train to here, I go through loads of fields, but I also go through quite a few towns, and you always see on the weekends there are people on a field, whether it be kids, adults, playing football.
And this is the good culture, this is the culture we want to celebrate of English football, the good culture, the culture of community, the culture of coming together, and you know, no matter what walk of life you're in or take, you can come on a Sunday to a pitch at 11 o'clock in the morning and play football for a couple of hours.
It's like, you know, Birmingham Blaze, they're a Sunday league grassroots team, and they say they welcome anyone. Remember when we spoke to them? They want people to come. It's not like you're going to turn up, you might be a bit hesitant, or they're going to... No, people want you there.
They
want numbers, and it's just such a great community and environment and atmosphere. You know, you're all there for the same reason. You all have the same interest, and it's football.
And Liam shared similar thoughts about the good reality of grassroots football.
The reality of grassroots football for me is that Regardless of how you walk away from the game, whether you've won, drawn or lost, there's always something to learn. Now, in academy football, I know that that differentiates again because it's a very elite level and it's very performance-based in many senses. But in grassroots football, there is a lot of potential, like massive, massive potential, to improve lives, not just playing football aspect, but lives as a whole. That's improving, if it's we're talking grassroots level for kids, improving them, allowing them to realise that being an individual to themselves is fine, improving their teamwork skills, their communication, confidence in working in groups, the list is endless. So grassroots football has that potential to change lives immensely. And then moving forward for when you grow up, just create core memories as well. And I think grassroots level for other sports, in my personal opinion, doesn't have that ability to do that, which is why, because we're so fortunate in football to have that ability to do it, we need to make the most of it. And we need to make use of the fact that it's such a special thing and we have such a special opportunity to benefit people in so many ways.
Well, Owen. And that is a wrap. A journey over.
I mean, we've travelled all across the West Midlands.
I've gone to Telford.
You have been.
That is.
Yeah, we've.
I've gone to Narnia, above and beyond.
We've been to a pub. Looked to buy flares in a pub.
That was funny. That was one of my favourite parts.
Learned so much about women's football.
That, I think, is the most.
It's got me excited for the Women's Euros coming up.
It has. It really has.
I mean, above and beyond, you know, all the issues we've talked about, which do need to be addressed. Let's focus on the light side for a second. Every single person we spoke to has an enthusiasm for their job, their profession, and for football. And it's been infectious, to be quite honest with you, that passion for football.
And to properly end this journey, join us next time.
We're going to revisit all our guests and see what they love about football. Why is it they're involved with? What do they love about the beautiful game? I mean, myself and Jack could sit here for hours and tell you the things we love about football, but we want to hear one. We put them on the spot, didn't we? One reason why you love football. And
we're going to be hearing from them, and as well, we're going to round up everything that we've learnt in this journey next on Turnstiles to Touchlines.
From Turnstiles to Touchlines was presented, produced and edited by Jack Carson and Owen Taylor, with thanks to Liam Davis, Gina Beardmore and all our contributors for helping us in the final part of our journey as we try to find out if there really is a troublesome culture plaguing English football. Cause it's a bittersweet